have a bit of a clear run. But over the last period of time, during all that's been happening around us as a church, Mark asked me if God was speaking to me about anything for us as a church. And I've learned, time has taught me not to say no immediately when I don't have something immediately, and just to be attentive to God. And really, sort of very quickly after Mark asked me that, within 24 hours of that, God put Gideon on my heart. Now, those of you that know me well will know that I'm not averse to hearing God. I love hearing God. I love the prophetic. I love it when God speaks. Normally for me, God speaks through something I see. Quite often when I'm walking the dog or when I'm with people, I can look at somebody, I'm looking at somebody and God will say something to me about them. Or often through pictures that he puts in my mind. And then he'll tell me what that means. So it's quite rare, very rare, for God to give me the name of a person in the Bible for me to go and look at. And I'm telling you that for a reason, because the last time, in fact, I think the only other time that has ever happened was in 2002, which is a long time ago. That's
when
like
you were five.
The year that Asher was born. But long before Asher was born, actually, we were at KBC. Mark was at Bible College. I was there loving our kids, as was he, but he was studying as well. I was having a conversation with Jack, who was four at the time. Some of you might remember baby Jack. He was four, very blonde-haired, blue-eyed, cute little guy. And we were talking about how God speaks to us and whether God can speak to young people. And into my mind, thinking at that time, dropped Samuel. So Jack and I spent some time looking at the story of Samuel, kind of exploring his question about can God speak to children, and how do you know when it's God? And as I read through the story of Samuel with Jack, there were points in the story where it felt like there was another voice reading than my own. I don't know if you've ever experienced that, where we all hear our own voice, we all think we sound ridiculous, and then we listen to it, we think we sound even more ridiculous. But when you're hearing it, it's like there is an audible voice in my head at points in the story. And it turned out to be at that time, in 2001, that God read, all I can describe it as is like God reads bits of the story with me. God read, and it was like God's voice was in my head as well as my own at certain points, kind of highlighting certain things as I read. Anyway, what that was about was actually by the end of that day, it became very clear that what God had highlighted to me through reading about Samuel led me to know that when Mark phoned me up and said, how about we move to Northampton and do this, this and this with this group of people, I knew the answer was yes, over the phone, without even a face-to-face conversation. So when God speaks to me like that, again, it feels pretty significant to me, okay? And I just want you to understand that, really. So that's kind of how I'm coming to Gideon. It's not a good idea. I didn't sit down and pray and say, Lord, what do you want to say to your people? And God took me to Judges. That's not how this happened. God put Gideon in my heart. And as I've read the story of Gideon, as we're going to do today, it was again the same. Like there were moments in the story where it wasn't just my own voice that I was hearing, but actually I was hearing God's voice as well. Now I find that pretty exciting, because it feels really significant that the last time was 2001, now it's 2019. You know, once in 18 years means that God's got something to say. And hopefully we'll have a bit of a grip of that by the end of the morning together. So I'm going to read quite a big chunk of the story. And I'm going to try and highlight for you in the way that I read the bits where God was reading with me. So we're going to be in Judges. And we're in chapter 7, starting in verse 1. And there is actually a bit of Gideon's story before this, but it wasn't where God took me. And so I won't be particularly highlighting very much from that. This is the bit of the story that I read, and this is the bits that God said to me. And I don't quite know how I'm going to indicate to you the bits where God was speaking as well. Maybe I'll sort of raise my hand when I read those bits, or I don't know. I'll try and find some way to highlight to you, because I want you to have that sense of, you know, reading this, but actually there's things that God is speaking through it, and I want to highlight those to you as we speak. So we're in Judges chapter 7. And just for context for you, we're in a stage in time where the Israelites have entered this kind of cycle of they did evil in the sight of the Lord, and some people fought them and they lost, and then somebody said to them they mustn't do that, and so they repented, and then that was okay for a little while, and then they did evil in the sight of the Lord, and then somebody fought them and they lost. We're in that cycle of time, okay? That's what's going on for the nation at this time, the nation of Israel, God's chosen people. And we're at a point where God has chosen Gideon, and this is the story, if you like, of Gideon's first venture with the people of God. Early in the morning, Jerubbaal, that is Gideon, and all his men camped at the spring of Harod. The camp of Midian was north of them in the valley near the hill of Moreh. The Lord said to Gideon, "You have too many men for me to deliver Midian into their hands. In order that Israel may not boast against me that her own strength has saved her, announce now to the people, anyone who trembles with fear may turn back and leave Mount Gilead." So 22,000 men left, while 10,000 remained. But the Lord said to Gideon, "There are still too many men. Take them down to the water, and I will sift them for you there. If I say, 'This one shall go with you,' he shall go. But if I say, 'This one shall not go with you,' he shall not go." So Gideon took the men down to the water. There the Lord told him, "Separate those who lap the water with their tongues like a dog from those who kneel down to drink." Always makes me laugh that bit, I don't know why. It's a funny picture, isn't it? 300 men lapped with their hands to their mouths. All the rest got down on their knees to drink. The Lord said to Gideon, "With the 300 men that lapped, I will save you and give the Midianites into your hands. Let all the other men go, each to his own place." So Gideon sent the rest of the Israelites to their tents, but kept the 300 who took over the provisions and trumpets of the others. Now the camp of Midian lay below him in the valley. During that night the Lord said to Gideon, "Get up, go down against the camp, because I'm going to give it into your hands. If you're afraid to attack..." He says that, by the way, because he knows that Gideon would be, because Gideon's already proved himself a bit of a scaredy cat. "If you're afraid to attack, go down to the camp with your servant Purah and listen to what they are saying. Afterward, you'll be encouraged to attack the camp." So he and Purah, his servant, went down to the outpost of the camp. The Midianites, the Amalekites, and all the other eastern peoples had settled in the valley, thick as locusts. Their camels could no more be counted than the sand on the shore. Gideon arrived just as a man was telling a friend his dream. "I had a dream," he was saying. "A round loaf of barley bread came tumbling into the Midianite camp. It struck the tent with such force that the tent overturned and collapsed." His friend responded, "This can be nothing other than the sword of Gideon, son of Joash, the Israelite. God has given the Midianites and the whole camp into his hands." When Gideon heard the dream and its interpretation, he worshipped God. He returned to the camp of Israel and called out, "Get up, The Lord has given the Midianite camp into your hands. Dividing the 300 men into three companies, he placed trumpets and empty jars in the hands of all of them with torches inside. Watch me, he told them. Follow my lead. When I get to the edge of the camp, do exactly as I do. When I and all who are with me blow our trumpets, then from all around the camp, blow yours and shout for the Lord and for Gideon. Gideon and the 100 men with him reached the edge of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, just after they had changed the guard. Shucks, they'd have been really fresh, wouldn't they? They blew their trumpets and broke the jars that were in their hands. The three companies blew the trumpets and smashed the jars. Grasping torches in their left hands and holding in their right hands the trumpets they were to blow, they shouted, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon." While each man held his position around the camp, all the Midianites ran, crying out as they fled. And on the basis of this story, Gideon is called a mighty warrior. How interesting. Okay, so I want to just look at each of those bits, really, that God highlighted to me. And I want to draw our attention to some very specific things. And I'm sure, you know, that we have ears to hear, don't we? And I'm sure that already you're picking up things that God is saying. If I say, this one shall go with you, he shall go. But if I say, this one shall not go with you, he shall not go. There were 22,000 men, and then there were 10,000 men, and then there were 300 men. Okay? That means that at the start of this, the company of Israelites that were going to fight these travellers who had taken up residence in the valley near to where they lived was over 25,000 people. Have you ever been to the Saints rugby ground? On the Cobblers football ground? The combined capacity of those two stadiums is about the size of the original company that had gathered to fight these people. That's quite a lot of people. If you had that many people in your army, you might feel reasonably confident that you stood a chance of defeating the enemy. If anyone trembles with fear, let them go home. 22,000 men left. Notice that they didn't ask that question again, because I think probably if they had, everyone might have gone. After that, they sifted them in different ways. What's clear to me as I read this story, and what God was saying to me as I was reading this story, is that actually this story is not about Gideon. This story is not about the Midianites. It's not about the Amalekites. It's about God. This story, it's about God. Our story is not about us. Where we are is not about us. It's about God. And I had the privilege, I'm doing KST at the moment, which is a 3-year study in theology, 5 weekends a year. I have the absolute privilege of doing that course at the minute. I'm in year 2. And shortly after I looked at this and God started highlighting things to me, I went away to a KST weekend. And at the KST weekend, it was a double weekend, which is a real mind blower. Like, it's 4 days, we do 2 modules, your brain explodes about the end of day 2, and pretty much day 3 and 4, you just go, God, if you're speaking to me, then let it be, because my brain is like exploded with joy and love for you already. But we studied Genesis, and what we learned about Genesis, I'd be here for forever, and anyway, Genesis is really flipping cool, guys. But Genesis is about God. It's about Yahweh. It's about God. It's about us learning about what God is like. Or actually, it's about his people learning about what God is like and learning how to relate to him. And it struck me that this is the same. This is about God. It's telling us what God is like, how he works, how he relates to his people, what his purposes are, what his plans are. And it's the same for us today, that this story that we find ourselves in right now, it's about God. It's not about us. And it's up to God who goes with us and who is with us. It's with God. That's with God. So that was the first thing I felt God speak to me about really clearly. And we did this module on Genesis, and then we went on to do a module on church history. Well, I was rubbish at history at school, like literally rubbish. Facts and figures are not really my gig at all. It didn't interest me, wasn't excited by it. But we had a lady come to speak to us about church history, and it's like totally her thing. Like Stella, I think, is a fair word. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely.
Literally, this person is like stellar at facts and figures, but not in an intellectual, in a very intellectual way, but a very heart-led intellectual way. She is passionate about history, like I am passionate about my boys. There you go, that probably illustrates it pretty well. She is passionate about God in history in a way that I hadn't really got was relevant. I'd not even understood that in my, you know, my frame of what the world looks like. That wasn't a thing. But she is, anyway. And all of that is to say that Genesis, the beginning of this book that we live by, is all about God. And history, it's like it's all been about God, guys. Like that hasn't changed. It's all been about God. And in this moment where we are now, it is all about God and what God wants to do and will do. And when you look at it like that, and when you look at Genesis, and then you look at church history for all of time, actually what filled me and what sits in this is in this story is the sheer inevitability about what God will do. You know, we've been singing it this morning. It is inevitable that God will do what God will do. He determines to do. It's inevitable. And do you know what? We should allow that to encourage us. That should encourage us. And I'll refer back to Judges 6 at this point. When God first found Gideon, when God first chose Gideon, he wasn't in military training school, he wasn't part of the army, he was actually hiding. And he was hiding in a wine threshing room, and he was threshing barley there because these travelling armies that had camped nearby, if he'd been threshing grain out in the open, they would have come and stolen it. So he wasn't brave, he was hiding. And when God comes, it says the angel of the Lord came, sat under a tree, obviously, because that's the thing you do. Let me just find it for a moment. I'm not going to be able to find it quickly. There we go, there it is. The angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak that belonged to Joash, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in a winepress to keep it from the Midianites. So he's a bit of a scaredy cat. When the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." What? Like, what? He's hiding in a winepress, threshing grain, because he's scared. And the angel of the Lord says to him, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." I wonder what things God said to us. But we just go, yeah, funny. That's hilarious. But actually we get just one chapter on and we can see God's wisdom in calling Gideon a mighty warrior. And there's a challenge for us in this. That which God has called you to, don't diss it. Don't disbelieve it. Don't look down on it. Because, guys, it's inevitable. God is going to do exactly what God is going to do with each of our lives and with us as a community. It's inevitable. what God is going to do. So, next bit that God highlighted to me as I was reading in verse 8, he kept the 300 who took over the provisions and the trumpets of the others. Not the usual tools of warfare. The provisions means like their food, their supplies of food. It doesn't mean their swords and their shields. It means their food. So now we have 300 men who are carrying a lot of food and trumpets. Brilliant. Excellent battle plan. What? Doesn't make any sense, does it? But what that alerted me to was that nothing was left behind. Nothing that was previously being carried was ditched. That they continued to carry that which had been carried. And now, rather than there being companies of men, with a trumpet between them, every man had a trumpet. Okay. Every person was carrying a trumpet and provisions. And there's a call to us in that to actually, what I felt like, or the visual image, if you like, because I'm a very visual person this way, is like, you know, there were 10,000 people, now there are 300. Of the 10,000 that left, some of them were carrying provisions and trumpets, and they put those down and they went back to their tents. That meant there was trumpets and provisions on the ground. And this felt really put that image in me quite powerfully, that actually there are trumpets and provisions that we need to pick up as a people. There are things that have been put on the ground, and God is asking us to pick those up. And then we skip forward a little bit to where Gideon and Purah go down to the camp, and they hear this crazy dream about somebody dreaming that a round loaf of barley came tumbling into the Midianite camp. Interesting aside that it was a loaf of barley rather than wheat. Barley is thought to be the cheaper, a cheaper grain, a less valuable grain, and that hence why they interpreted that to be the Israelites, one of the people. So I was like, oh, that's a bit interesting little aside, that they very much looked down on these people. And then that they interpret that to be the sword of Gideon, son of Joash. Well, we've just read Gideon's story. Did anyone hear a sword anywhere in the story at all? There are no swords. There are no swords up to that point in Gideon's story. This interpretation is from God. And they declare defeat over themselves in that moment. And that gives Gideon the courage to go back and lead his men into this battle, with inverted commas, because it wasn't really a battle, was it? Okay, so that's interesting. Gideon heard, skipping forward again into verse 16. So we've got these 300 men, they're in three companies of 100. This room seats just over 100, I think it's a 150 capacity. So we've got two rooms full like this, going against thousands of men, and split them into three sets of 100, and they've all got trumpets and empty jars in their hands, and inside the empty jar is a torch. So that's a stick of wood that is lit with a ceramic cover over it so that the light cannot be seen. So they're carrying a hidden light and a musical instrument, perfectly equipped for battle. So I don't know how equipped for battle you feel. Maybe you feel like you're not equipped for battle. Well, maybe God would say, you have exactly what you need for battle. What do those two things represent in terms of the people at the time? Well, trumpets are an instrument with which they worship the God that they follow. So they're carrying a symbol of worship. They're going into battle with worship. And they're carrying a torch, right now a hidden torch, under a ceramic jar that can't be seen. They're going into battle with light and worship. Well, light, if you just imagine with me for a minute, across the Bible, light means it's about God. God brings light. Where there is light, darkness cannot overcome it. So they're carrying a symbolic representation of the God who is light, who breaks up darkness, and their worship. And they're going into battle with that. Now they've got a torch in this hand and a trumpet in this hand, so they don't have any hands for a sword or for a shield. Their hands are full with trumpets and torches. So you might feel like you don't have what you need for battle. Do you believe in the God who is the bringer of light, whose power overturns darkness, who brings so much light that actually darkness cannot overcome him? And do you know how to worship? You're in. So they follow Gideon, and they follow his instructions, grasping the torches in their left hands and holding in the right hands the trumpets they were to blow. They shouted, and here this word again, this mystery word, a sword for the Lord and for Gideon. They didn't have a sword. They didn't have a sword among them, 300 men. But they knew they were going into battle. They knew they were going to fight. They were going out of obedience and out of trust. And that's what the heart of this to me is about, that God is calling us at this time to obedience and to trust. And as we're hearing this word, I don't know what the challenge is for you. You know, maybe there have been times where God has spoken over you that you are a mighty warrior and you've gone, you don't know me. Can you not see my circumstances right now? I'm afraid, or I'm hiding, or I haven't been worshipping you with my whole heart. I'm not the right man, woman, child for this job. Let's not doubt who God says we are. Let's receive it. Maybe you feel really ill-equipped for what God is calling you to do. Maybe you're in that position where actually you're one of the 300 and you're not carrying a trumpet, but there are trumpets on the ground. Maybe it's time to ask God to give you the courage to pick something up and stand in a space where there was a person with a trumpet. Now there's a trumpet on the ground. Maybe it's time to pick something up. God's calling you to do that. Maybe you're carrying a trumpet and a torch and you're thinking, this is the most ridiculous thing ever. How can I go into battle with a trumpet and a torch? This is not what I need. I don't have it. I'm not qualified. I'm not good enough. Look at Val. She's a much better singer than me. Or look at, you know, whatever it is, whoever you're tempted to look at and go, oh, they're much better equipped for this than me. God is saying to us today, no. No. If you believe in God and you have the ability to worship him, and you have exactly what you need to walk in obedience to God and to trust him, because, guys, it's inevitable that God is going to do what God is going to do. And that phrase kept bringing me back to John's word, actually, when he spoke about the rain that had fallen in the mountains, and I don't know how many of you were here if you've listened to it, but this sense that actually when you're in a desert, when you're in this desert and it's dry and arid, and maybe it's felt dry and arid for a long time, John's word was the rain has already fallen in the mountains. It is inevitable that rain will reach the desert, and that desert will see water, and it will bring life to dormant seeds. And those dormant seeds might be who God's told you that you are, or what God's told you that you're to be or to do, or even how God's calling you to walk. But the message for us from Gideon is that it's about who God says we are, not about what we feel that we are, not about what we see that we are. And in the midst of who God says we are, the call is to obedience of God and trust of God and carrying a torch and a trumpet and walking where God calls us to walk. So that's really encouraged me this last little while. I hope it's encouraged you. That's really all I've got to say this morning, so I'll hand it back to Mark.